Oh, and we're recording again.
Oh, I was just going to ask about the, you mentioned the smell of the books when you arrived. And what was that? Was that old, obviously old, bound ancient volumes with glue in it?
That's right.
What did you do about that?
Well, some of them were replaced. Libraries, not just law libraries, but libraries all over, always offered books as gifts, and sometimes to their own detriment because they get flooded with books they can't use. But I remember we did very well with the law firms which were closing or consolidating. You know, several law firms would consolidate, and they had all these books. What to do? So we had a good choice of volumes to replace sets and so on. So, you know, or maybe I just got used to the smell. There's always that possibility. I was trying to think of things that would... It was such a colorful period, and actually it's a strange dichotomy in the 60s and 70s. There was kind of a feeling afoot among young people that they wanted something new. It was almost kind of like a mouse sort of thing, you know, let's get back to the basics, let's get rid of the olds and bring in the news and so on. And so for years the law students had their photographs done at graduation time, and the photographs hung in the corridors and so on. But there was a certain point in the 70s, I think 70s, yeah, probably, where they said, we're not going to do this anymore, that's old-fashioned. Who cares about this sort of stuff? So there were some years there where we didn't have the graduating class pictures and so on. It just wasn't cool, you know. But we did all kinds of things which were fun and cool. One of the things the students did, was they used to have an annual tricycle race. I don't know if they have that anymore.
They still do.
They still do. Yeah. Well, the library was the hub of that. It started outside, and it went around the building maybe maybe twice. People on their tricycles, and they all ended up in the main reading room. And the winner would be elevated and stood on a table and was crowned something or other, I don't know. That was always fun. There was a very active charades program, which the faculty had a team, the library had a team. There were all kinds of student teams. It was really cutthroat charades. It was not just, you know, the kind of stuff you do after dinner at Christmas. It was really serious stuff. And we had a trophy and all that sort of thing. It was a nice time in which the faculty, the students, and the support staff of the library particularly were quite close. We did all kinds of things. They had curling matches. People could curl. Hockey, even. They had the women, when there were enough numbers of them, they used to have a faculty and the women's meet. So it wasn't all books. It wasn't all reading the law, which is really the phrase that would have been used at the turn of the last century, you know. There was obviously a need to acquaint yourself with precedent and the law, and statutory changes which affected the law. And so that was our role in the library, was to make sure those elements of the legal world were acquired and administered well. And when I think back now, we overreached ourselves in so many ways. I remember getting, at some point, we began to acquire all the judgments from the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court, British Columbia Court of Appeal and Supreme Court, in paper. And we would keep them and bind them and organize them in a certain number of them in a certain way that you could find them. And then there were commercial services published by the Law Society and so on, which would cite cases that had been heard on various subjects, and you knew that you had the judgment. This is before they went online. This is before the computer really impacted libraries. And in some ways, made libraries better than they were in the early years. It was always a hunt and peck sort of thing, until people like librarians tried to organize them in a certain way that the average law student and professor and judge even would be able to find their way through. I guess when I think of the years that I was here, the biggest changes were the coming of computers. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. It was frowned upon at first. We had a little demonstration module in one corner of the library. There was a fellow named Bob Franson, who was on the faculty of law, American fellow. He was very caught up in the field of computerization. Joe Smith, who was a local professor, working later in his life in the field of artificial intelligence, was another. But the faculty itself thought it was an interesting curiosity. They would come down and we have a demonstration from Bob as to, you know, what you could do with the computer in a test database they had, which was the beginning of QuickLaw, which is, I think, still going. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, now you have so many ways of finding things. But in those days, it was kind of an interesting toy. And would it ever take off? Well, we didn't know. But would judges ever accept something that came off a screen? Wouldn't they need a book? And how are we going to cite these things? I mean, that was always an issue. I remember one of the faculty members coming up to me and saying, this is later now, once we had some laptops being brought into school, and then later when we had online access to law reports and journals and so on, coming up to me and saying, I can't stand this clicking of the keys. Can you do something about stopping people to bringing these machines into class? Mm-hmm. I said, you know, no, I can't. This is the way the world is going to be. Mm-hmm. We can put in earplugs or something, I suppose, but that was fun. Oh, another thing I should mention for those years, the Canadian Association of Law Libraries is an organization which started in 1963, I believe, in the East, and all Canadian law librarians were invited to join. And I, in my second year at UBC, I joined. And eventually I was on the executive for 10 years, and two of them as president. And they just celebrated their 50th, the beginning of their 50th year. We were all working very hard to do the very best we could with our resources, and we knew that we couldn't afford to buy everything. So we tried cooperative measures between the libraries across the land. The first thing that we did was to create a data, a publication, a serials list, listing who does have Harvard Law Review. Well, everyone had Harvard Law Review. Does everybody have Albany Law Review? How about it? And they didn't, of course. So we encouraged all the law librarians across Canada to send the lists of their holdings. And we put those together, someone put them together initially, and we had our first edition of the serials list. And this was great because you could then phone. I don't know whether phone, it was expensive in those days to do it this way, but that's what you would do. Or you could send a letter, say we need a case. This is before email and all those wonderful things. And actually Mary Mitchell, who is on the faculty staff now here, is a reference librarian. She was the editor of the serial list for many years. But of course, everything that was in our serials list is now available online. So that's ceased publication about 2 years ago. But in its time, it was a great cooperative thing. We actually tried to cooperate in individually buying certain sets and things so that people who needed to read them could either borrow them, which would be expensive to do, but maybe save their research for the summer and travel to Edmonton and use the collection there or something, if it happened to be oil and gas, for example. And it's true that some of the faculty of law libraries were that way. Like Edmonton and Calgary were very much so in the oil and petroleum collections, and we knew that. We wouldn't try to duplicate it all. So that was a major part of our lives, was cooperating with each other and trying to provide the best library service we could on limited budgets. The 80s were bad because we had a recession in 1982, around there. We were all asked to cut back everything. We didn't lose any staff, but our hours were somewhat reduced, I believe. Certainly the cost of subscriptions were an eye-opener, and some things became impossible to acquire. I had a rule of thumb. If there was a loose leaf service that came out on a topic that I thought was notable and maybe original, I would acquire it in its basic form, and then we put a sticker on the front saying, due to budgetary issues, this is not being updated currently. Refer to traditional sources of information such as the digests to find out what may have happened to the case that you're reading about in this loose leaf service. And that was a good idea. It backfired a little because after so many years the thing became almost irrelevant because there had been so many changes over the years that the pages had not been coming in and all this sort of stuff. That's a kind of publication that's unique to law, possibly, and commerce too. Loose leaf services, which you have to be filed every week, and that was a part of the job description of my staff, that everyone had to undertake a certain number of titles to keep up. A boring job, but now of course it can be done online, but again you're paying pretty large sum of money for the service. We started to acquire things which were audio tapes and videotapes, mm-hmm. in that period as well, and the equipment that played them. So all these little changes in your routine were became part of the daily expectation. People would say, "Well, you don't have videos," sort of thing.
Why would you need audio and visual? I'm sure there's a simple reason. But.
Well, the ones that we acquired, we didn't acquire everything. The ones that we acquired tended to be demonstration videos. For example, how do you handle cross-examination in court? That sort of thing, for use in classes. We wouldn't use them in the library. We were the holding center for distribution of them, and we would hold the equipment and it'd be wheeled out down to wherever the room was that the class is being held, and presumably the teacher would show it and then ask questions and get student response and suggestions and so on. It wasn't a big collection, but we did do that. I also thought it was important that law students, who were very busy doing their own thing, were aware of what was going on in the legal world, other than what was in their case books and so on. And so I had a clipping service which resulted in notice boards. I would try and maintain current news items about the law, and sometimes the most notable, noteworthy hearings in the Supreme Court of Canada or your Supreme Court of the United States and so on would be there on the board for people just to scan while they're waiting around. That was sort of good. I also tried to make it more interesting for them coming into the library to see what current new books had just come in. So we always put book covers up and so on with the call number and how you would get it. I know the law school now here does an online listing. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Of the newest acquisitions with a brief description of what they are. Our cataloging of our books was not done on site. We would acquire the books and then send them to Central Cataloging Processing Division, which was over across campus. And it always annoyed me, and it wasn't their fault, but they would hold on to these things for a long time until the official LC cataloging was available for that particular item. And in the meantime, the currency was diminishing somewhat, and I used to say to them, how about if I keep the books and send you the title pages only, and we'll just list them on the wall. We'll put a call number on it, but the call number will be the order number that we've assigned to that particular title. Once you have the cataloging from the sheets we've sent you, send me a note saying send those for processing, so then we would acquire the book and send it back over. And I mean, it was kind of a hodgepodge. They were in no particular order except the order number on the wall. But people like to scan it to see what's up there that we're acquiring before it got, you know, properly processed and so on into the catalog.
So you'd send them a photocopy of the...
Not photocopy, just a Xerox copy of the title page. That would be enough for them to work with, probably. Yeah. Actually, the first time I ever saw a Xerox machine was at UBC. And that sort of changed life a little bit, too, because if I don't know what people used to do. I think they used to tear pages out of books or something. or did a lot of handwriting. But we had an awful... It wasn't really a Xerox machine. It was some kind of thing that smelled. But there was a toner sort of stuff you used.
Oh, like a... Not a...
Mimeograph?
Gestetner?
It was like that, but it wasn't a Gestetner, but it was that sort of thing, you know. And I used to come out on the weekends. We used to live out in Kerrisdale. I would nip out in my car and make sure that the thing was out of... It was full of paper and toner for the weekend, because my staff, they were a variety of students who probably wouldn't have known what to do with this thing, and particularly if it jammed, you know. Well, now, of course, it could be that you're having trouble with your computers and you need some assistance. You know, the thing's crashed, and what should I do now? But students are pretty savvy now, I think. Yeah.
So there's been a real technological revolution. It sounds like it didn't happen right away after
you
got hired.
No, it was gradual. As I say, from the early 70s, the first inkling of how computers could affect your research in the law started right through till I left in the 1998 when I left. They were just putting in the first network in the system, so that all they were electrifying all the carrels, and that made that, you know, the whole thing changed immensely. I wouldn't have stayed at some place for 32 years if I didn't find it interesting and amusing. Mm-hmm. You know, there was always something going on that was interesting. And I always said to people when they said, oh, I don't know what you librarians do, I'd say, well, you know, there's always something to do. We never finished anything we can say that we've started, but it's always interesting. And I used to say, you know, I don't rush away Friday afternoon or dread coming in Monday morning. I feel privileged to have a job that challenges me, at least, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
What were your relations with between the library and the deans? We've just lost Charles Bourne, is it? I think last week he died.
Oh, did he? I didn't know.
Yes,
that.
I
thought about him today. I was thinking about what people were here when I came, and Charles Bourne was He was in one of those two offices I mentioned that was in the old building as you came in the front door. And he was an authority on international treaties, and he worked on the Columbia River business back in the 50s and 60s. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, our relationship was good.
Good.
George Curtis was... He was I think a good administrator. He came in. I mean, he started in 1945 here, and he had an office right up until the time he died. And he died at almost 100, actually. Yeah. This, by the way, I'll show you something here that I'll give you if you're interested in it. Did I mention that I wrote songs and things?
You did.
Yeah. Well, some of the things I did were mostly for people. And in this case, I have a song for George Curtis. This is for his 90th birthday. And that was an original melody and lyrics. And I just thought to donate them to you for the archives if you're interested. I have one here that I wrote for Peter Burns when he was leaving the deanship. It's called, the tune is It Isn't Easy Being Green, you know, from the Muppets or whatever. And then when Lynn Smith left the role of Dean, I wrote one for her as well. That's to the tune of I Do Anything from Oliver. So that's a little gift for you to keep.
Thank you. We have anticipated that the people we interview will have documents.
I hope they will, because that makes it interesting. And also, when I retired, I don't know how many times all the deans were together, but they were together that day down at the Yacht Club. And I'll give you this picture, if you don't mind having it copied, and I'll give the envelope to send it back. Anyway, there they all are, from Dean Curtis on the right there, right down to Joost Blom, who's still on faculty here, but was the dean when I left. So there they all are. Is it six deans? And I think it's six.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll give that to you for your file. And actually, I'm not boasting with this, but I thought it's interesting. When I retired, they did an article on me on the Advocate, and I was on the cover. And that was my office. That's exactly how my office was in the old building. And this, instead of a piano, of course, was a desk. And here they've listed the things that I would have been interested in, as well as law. UBC Faculty of Law is on that tape. No business like show business. Anyway, that...
You didn't really have a piano in there.
No, I didn't. No, that would have been fatal. But that was kind of fun.
Well, it might be nice to do to write up some of the what you've been telling us. And if we do, it'd be great to have a photograph or two.
Yeah. You know what I did, Richard, for this 50th anniversary call, a conference in Toronto. They invited a lot of us old people to come back for the final banquet, which I did, and my wife and I both went. And they had made exactly what you're doing. They were reconstructing the association history through tapes. And they got to me, and all of them had been oral up to that point, but when they got to me, they said, you know, we remember how you used to play the piano and sing at our conferences about what we were doing in the law world and so on. Would you mind doing a video for us? So I said, no, that would be great. So they sent a cameraman to my house, and a lady who was a former law librarian came out with them, and we did an hour-long, just as I'm telling you, sort of thing. But he cut in among all the talk, and it was sort of boring about libraries. he cut the songs in as well. And it's kind of an interesting thing, because I was able to remember the lyrics and most of the tunes. So it's made for the archives, but I thought it was interesting enough to watch, you know. So I think anything visual you can get from people mm-hmm. is a good idea.
Well, one thing I found with my logging work was that the retired loggers often would say, "Do you want to see my books?" or "I suppose you're interested in photographs and or maps," because mm-hmm. logging is very map based. So
yeah.
I always accepted these and ended up with quite a library. So we've got an office here with these filing cabinets they've provided, and I imagine we're going to meet people who say, you know, who are at the point of getting rid of letters and photographs. And I think we're going to accumulate quite a few.
Well, there's so much history, you know, and out there, popular history, that is so easily thrown away by generations that don't know who these people are and what is this all about anyway.
Well, that reminds me, we should ask you who else we should talk to. I mean, we do have a preliminary list, I think, somewhere.
Well, Alan Sirocco would be fun to talk to. Who to talk to?
He's in Vancouver?
He's in Vancouver, yes. He's in the phone book, I think. I can provide that for you if you want.
You mentioned other names like
Mike Harcourt.
Molly Buckingham. Is she still?
No, she's no longer living. Mike Harcourt was a law student, and he actually started the legal services program for the disadvantaged people, storefront lawyering sort of thing. He'd be good. And I don't know where he lives anymore. Is he in Vancouver?
Well, of course, he had the place on the Gulf Islands where he fell.
That's right. Exactly.
We can find him.
Are you looking for people who are any field of law? But who went to UBC?
Yep. Faculty and graduates. Anyone you can think of who you.
Kim Campbell. Kim Campbell was always fun. She was a law student and very active. And she's not living here anymore, but she, I'm sure, comes to town from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of people.
The other name is faculty. Bob Franson. Is he still around?
He's in California. I haven't seen him for years. Let me see. I made a list of a few people here.
Mentioned Mary Mitchell. She's still
here. Yes.
Still here.
Well, she's terrific. I mean, I don't know whether she'd want to do it.
You earlier you mentioned Doreen
Ingram.
Ingram and Dinah Priestley. Are they still?
Well, yeah, Doreen is fine. She's still around. I don't know that she would be interested in doing that. Some of them are still teaching here. Like Tony Shepherd is still teaching here. Tony, he sort of changed the world by fighting having to retire at 65.
Basically single-handedly.
Single-handedly.
Fought it away.
I mean, he should be, he'd be a good interviewer to talk about that particular thing at least, because mm-hmm. he worked hard at it. Mm-hmm. He don't say this to him particularly, but he was a bit of a bane in the library because he collected books all the time, and we didn't want to destroy his train of thought if he was doing research of some sort, but we never quite sure. If we couldn't find a book, we always went to Tony's Carol just in case. Oh, speaking of Carols, the one thing in the old building which was awful, the new build, the one that was just demolished, was graduate student carols. They were really little closets. They were very claustrophobic, and I felt badly when people came here from other parts of the world to do their masters, that they were stuck in these places. And I hope the new building has a better facility. I'm sure they do have better facilities here.
I don't know what they have for graduate students, actually.
Really?
No.
They don't?
Well, I don't know. There is a graduate student lounge. I haven't seen any carrels in the library.
Okay,
though.
Really?
So I don't know. I don't know if
that was another part of my job. I guess in a way, someone else should have been doing it. But I thought because I was the chief at the time that it would mean more that it came from me. I insisted that if students were wanting to do projects and hold books in a carrel, either they put them back every night so we knew where they were, or they signed the carrel out through me to themselves for the term. And so I used to get a lineup of people outside my office saying, I'm going to book a carrel. That was fine with me. I didn't, you know, they were supposed to get an okay from a faculty member, and I think some of them did. I didn't push it too much. But then once they did that, they could sign the books out to the carrel. Each carrel had its own card in our file. So if the book was needed, my staff knew where it was. They could go to the carrel and retrieve it, at least briefly, if they so on. That was quite good service. I don't know if you don't have carrels, and I don't know how you do it now.
I honestly, I don't know.
No.
I had one at U of T, but that was for something else.
Yes.
Not for law,
so. Yeah, they're very good. They're a little home of your own.
Well, it was really nice. I mean, it was no bigger than about this space from there to the wall. It was
sure.
As large as my carrel was.
But yeah.
For studying, it was perfect.
It's fine, and
you felt monastic in a way. That you
well,
were
and you can, yeah. And you can go away and leave what you're working on and come back and it'll be there. And no one's hopefully going to disturb it. Certainly the library staff wouldn't have. And we also had the rule if we took anything from there, we always left the call number and what it was we took. Whatever. All these little librarian type things that I would hold at night, I'd think, why don't we do that? That would help, you know. Mm. People would...
Did the students respond positively to you? It sounds like you were conscientious.
Well, I was.
Yeah.
I mean, I took my job seriously. I think we all got along pretty well.
Do you remember any students in particular who were eccentric or outstanding in some way?
No. Well, it's hard, you know, to... You know who's great at that? That's Alan.
Yeah.
Alan, if you can get him, he's great about remembering people. He was, in lots of ways, more a people person than I am. He formed a fishing club, for example, for law students. He used to go for a weekend away fishing and all that kind of stuff. And he would have stories, and particularly delightful stories about reference questions he would get from not necessarily even people who were at the law school. People from the street would come in, you know, and spill the beans about things that were going on in their lives. Some of them were funny, some of them were tragic, really. I thought he was a really good reference librarian because he had been a lawyer working with disadvantaged people, and he knew how to talk to them. So I would say yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say yes. You'd be good.
I was just going to have a look at our list of questions and see if we missed anything critical.
What was the library's role in 1966? It was really just, when I came, it was really to get the place in order.
Yep.
To make it accessible for everybody. When its role in 1998 was to take advantage, I think, of technology. I think.
So at first it was a matter of just organizing and building and making it accessible.
Yeah, building a good collection, making it accessible.
And the call number thing that you mentioned with using that, the system.
The schedule, yeah.
That sounds like it was an important part.
Well, it was very time consuming, but since then they've redone it. It's been done again, and congratulations to Sandra and her staff that they have renumbered it all again, but now they've done the KE for Canadian law, KF for American law, and so on. And that's a big job. And, but anyway, that took a lot of my time, for sure. How do the needs of students and faculty change over time? Well, I think the needs of students were always the same, but we weren't always as able to handle it right off the bat until we had done certain things. Legal education.
We've all had some history here, I think, the three of us. You mentioned you studied history as an undergraduate. It's just a kind of self-serving, but and off the topic. But was Margaret Ormsby here at that time? Was she one of the?
She taught. I took her American history course. She's a good teacher.
Yeah.
She had an annoying mannerism. She cleared her throat all the time, and like I'm doing in a way now, but it was more.
I remember.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Did you have her as a teacher?
No, she was. My dad's family is from Vernon,
oh, yeah.
From Coldstream, and they were neighbors.
Oh yeah.
So I always knew her as a
yeah.
kid.
Yeah. She was a nice lady, but she was a teacher, and I was a student, and I didn't really know her very well. I'm trying to think of Fred Soward.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know his name?
I know the name.
Yeah, he was Canadian law, Canadian history. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dorothy Somerset was the head of theater, and I spent a lot of time not hitting the books, but doing plays and stuff with Dorothy Somerset and all the young actors and so on at the time. And Freddie Wood Theater, we used to perform in, and the old auditorium, which has been refurbished now, is up and running again. That was our basic home back when I first came to UBC.
Did you continue your drama?
Oh yeah, I do and did. I've stopped now. I find it. I'll be 80 next year, and I don't really like to be out at night so much, and etc. So I'm not doing anything now. But up until 2 years ago, I was acting in plays on stage occasionally, which stage work is much more fun than anything else. But I did quite a few movies and bits. Always old man, tramp. Postman, but they were fun to see more than to do. Like they always sound a little glamorous, but you know you go in there for a one scene call, and you're there at 7 o'clock in the morning. They get around to you at 5 p.m, and you're sitting in a I don't know trailer somewhere. You know, it's not much fun. People are nice. Okay, the longest run I ever had was a 3-week shoot, which was about an airplane hijacking. It was not a very good movie when it finally finished, but we had fun. But because I was a member of a passenger on this doomed aircraft flight and died en route from a heart attack, I had to be there. I mean, once I was on board, unless they opened the door and threw me out, I was there. And so for most of that 3 weeks, we played lots of games and Scrabble and so on. And and then when they'd call us to the set, I would just take my position.
There wasn't to think about.
Wasn't a heck of a lot of acting involved. But that was sort of fun. But and that's okay. It's fine, but I'm not doing it anymore. Yeah.
So you took it into library school. You took a liberal arts background.
Yes.
History and English.
Yeah.
And some
teaching. A little sociology, a little psychology, a little, I don't know what, economics. I was terrible at. I was not a great student, but I had an inquiring enough mind, I guess. I felt I should have had to know a little about everything. and but law wasn't one of them. That was the big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it goes to show you can, in fact, perform in a field not your own if you're given the opportunity to, and the have the right attitude toward what you're doing to succeed. I felt I was successful at it. And any time I wasn't sure, I always turned it over to a reference library. And Alan and Mary. Mary's great. They knew what to do. And I was just looking after making sure the whole show kind of was together and so on. But I don't even know how large the staff is here now. Some of them are still the same here on the staff of the library.
You've worked in there, Graham. Yeah.
Karen Dixon was here when I was here. Karen is the one who does the photocopying for Downtowners.
Yeah, she's still here.
She's
yeah,
here.
She is.
Pat Liu.
I'm not sure. Oh, no, I'm thinking
Asian.
Of Pat.
Oh, she's Asian. She does the acquisitions ordering.
Yeah, I'm pretty
you
sure
would know
she's
her,
still here. Mary's still here.
And Mary, yeah. I don't think anyone else. I met some other people on the staff. They were very nice. But I just, when I came to see the new building, that was what I was doing. Yeah. Are you working any other history right now besides this?
I think I've got about three things going on. Another logging book.
Yes.
Called Pacific Timber to go with these two.
Okay.
And then, of course, this job. And we're hoping to turn what we're planning to do. And we've been working on getting ethics approval. Not ethical approval, but we just got that a few days ago, so
mm-hmm.
you're the first.
Mm-hmm.
But the plan is to do some writing, and turn the interviews somehow into short profiles of people for the alumni magazine or for the for the online newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have the material from the interviews, the recorded material. We'll also have what every three-dimensional material you contribute.
Yeah.
I can see people kind of bringing boxes in and this is fine.
The university archives acquired a lot of the early years of Faculty of Law materials. I don't even know who's running that over there now, but I remember they were all stored in our basement here, and I was worried about them getting water damage because we have the occasional thing. But they did move them out, so you might want to inquire about that, because the early correspondence at the setting up of the school in 1945 and the coming of the veterans and all that, it's all documented there.
I'll ask Chris Hives is the
Chris Hives, that's right. Yeah. He's still there. Well, that's good. I remember just thumbing through them one day and going through them. I discovered a letter from Rafe Mayer asking for a job as a bookshelver in the library. It's kind of fun.
That would be a nice thing to include in.
Well, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's around. Yeah, but I don't know where they store them. The whole facility's changed over there, so I don't know. But
well, that's the sort of thing we'll be doing, and the end product will be actual writing. Will be the profiles and turning this what we're collecting into little into profiles, into
mm-hmm.
stories.
Sure.
And that's where the skills that I suppose the skills that I have.
I'll leave this with you mind sending it back at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I was interviewed by, because some of the things I've said, I think are probably, just a minute, mm-hmm. I'm not sure where this is here. But this was an interview. Bruce Woolley, do you know Bruce?
No.
He's fun. He's a good person to talk to. He talked some of the time here. Yeah, this is a few things that I may have not said to you. He may have said.
We'll certainly, what we can do is photocopy that and then get
it. Here's this. These are the notes that I was given when I took over the job in 1966.
Great.
And they're, anyway, kind of on the old legal paper.
Mm-hmm.
They still use legal paper, legal pads?
Not as much.
Probably use iPads now.
Well, at least students, I don't know about professors, most students, it's almost exclusively laptops for taking notes. So I'm one of the, in a class of about 100, I'm one of the very few who still writes by hand. And that's not because I don't like computers or I'm a Luddite, it's just habit.
Yeah.
And I also know that I see other people in front of me distracted by other things. They're on the internet, distracted. I'm very prone to distraction, so if I have the temptation, I will use it and I will abuse it. I can do very little with the pen except for write.
Yeah.
And even
my handwriting is so terrible now that I wouldn't try to to do anything like that. Like writing an exam would be just terrible for me. But that comes of age. But I've got an iPad now, and I love it. I'm on it all the time, looking up stuff. And sometimes just simple stuff, like I can't get an answer in a crossword puzzle, but I'll look it up on the iPad. Or I watch an old movie that I haven't thought about for years and stuff. I contribute. There is a database called the Internet Movie Database.
IMDb, yes.
Yeah, IMDb. It's good. It's a good one. And I contribute to that. And my contributions take the form of quotes. I quote from people's quotes that I read. So I read, when I'm reading magazines and newspapers, I look for quotation marks and see if there's any salient thing that the person says that's relevant to something about them. I mean, it's not just Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes type stuff. I don't know if you know, but this database is not just about movie stars and movies, but it's about directors and writers and subjects of movies like Benito Mussolini. They're all in there. If there was a documentary made about them, they're in there. And so it's a great place to look for me to contribute quotes from these people. I mean, I've put in over 2,000 different people I've already dealt with, and I do a few every day when I'm reading, and as I say, it sharpens my interest in what I'm reading to look for this kind of stuff.
How do you do it? Do you find the quotes in other sources?
Yeah, and then I go in, and usually, I check and see if the quote is already there. Some people are well known for certain quotes. Winston Churchill's quotes are widely available everywhere. But I've run across into a couple that I didn't see. They're not in this list at all, and I put them in. You apply to be a contributor, and they recognize you. Hello, Tom, it says when you go in, and you have a choice of things you can fill in. I choose quotations, usually. You can put in trivia, too. There's things about them that you can add if you wish. But it's just too much. I want to make a whole employment out of this. But it's
what's the name again?
Internet Movie Database. IMDb is what Graham and you and I know about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of the good places to go. Should I bother watching this movie?
And oh yeah,
because so, 2 stars out of 10.
That's like, right.
Well, maybe I won't watch it unless the person I know has recommended and said, I know you like helicopters. This is all about it. You love it.
Yes.
It's a helicopter.
There's another one that you may know, Rotten Tomatoes. Do you know
Rotten Tomatoes? Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes.
I find that one generally better for up-to-date movies.
Current stuff.
In the theater, that kind of thing.
Current stuff.
But IMDb, I find, is better for older movies from like the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't seen anymore.
If you watch... this is something I discovered the other day. There's on your computer, there's a database, there's a website called Classic movies online, classic movies online. And there's a different movie every day in its entirety, and it stays on for a week. So at any one time, you have a choice of seven movies, and you just click on it, and it shows the show. And yesterday was, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart. I've seen it before, but there it was yesterday. And last week we had The Fall of the Roman Empire with Christopher Plummer and so on. It's kind of a good one. And sometimes it's awful stuff. The one today is not good. I can't remember what it is now, but it's kind of schlocky. I don't know how they make their money, because they don't ever ask me to pay for anything. It's
probably subliminal advertising.
I suppose.
Some form of advertising. Well, that seems to be the business model.
I mean, I used to buy when I was doing these collection things. I used to think. Law students have lives other than studying the law, but they might want to read around the law fiction. So I used to buy things like Bleak House, made sure that we had a copy of Bleak House with Charles Dickens, and I bought a few of the, before he became so prolific, a few of the early Turo books about lawyers and stuff. I don't know whether they went out much, but you know, the main library probably didn't have them. So I felt I was probably, they would have Dickens for sure. Mm-hmm. That's another database, by the way, that's wonderful, I think. Mm-hmm. It's called the Project Gutenberg. Do you know Project
Gutenberg? I do know the one. See, I'm still a little hesitant when, you know, I have a bunch of books. I have a tablet as well, just a BlackBerry
player. Yeah, yeah.
I have a bunch of books on there. I've read one of them. I generally prefer just having the solid copy book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Because I'm also really irresponsible with my books, so I like to write all over them.
Well, Project Gutenberg is good, Richard, because it started back in the 70s. The university decided that anything that was out of print, but no, not out of print, anything that was out of copyright would be fair game to digitize, and so they've started doing that. So you don't need to own, don't go out and buy a whole set of Charles Dickens. They're all available to you. You can download Bleak House in the snap of a finger, and it's on your thing, and you can read it at leisure. And you can, you know, one thing I discovered I didn't know was that you can just put your finger on a word that's used by the author, hold it on there, and up pops a thing that says dictionary. You find out what that word means, because you know how often you think, what is that word? But you don't take the time to go to the dictionary to look it up. They're there. It's fabulous. It's fabulous.
Isn't that something?
But I agree. But you know, I'm getting, the time is marching on with me, so it's time now I read things, at least looked at some things that I consider must be classics and that I didn't get to ever.
Yeah.
So I'll turn to The Red and the Black or something and read the first few pages, and if I like it, I carry on. If I don't, because some of the old books are pretty stilted, they're pretty hard to get through sometimes. But I do it, and it's kind of fun.
Well, I remember hearing a story that's possibly apocryphal. Yeah. I don't know, but allegedly, and I used to feel guilty about not finishing a book until I had heard this story. Apparently, Samuel Johnson didn't finish a single book in his life. He just would start it and then wouldn't finish it. He sort of skimmed through and get the gist of it, but he never finished one. I thought, well, if it's good enough for Samuel Johnson, I don't need to feel too guilty putting down a book and not completing it.
I heard an interesting interview yesterday on the radio when I was driving. Somebody who said that he always reads the last page of a novel first. How about that?
That it just makes my skin crawl.
Well, that's, and he decided, it was just his thing. He decided that if he likes the last page, he's probably going to like the first book, part of the book, and then he'll go on. But if it ends, if the end of a book doesn't turn him on, then he doesn't think he's going to like the rest of it. So it's an easy way to not get around to reading lots of books, I guess.
Well, the end of a book, too, is the hardest, often the hardest thing to write.
That's right.
There was a thing I saw on Hemingway has got 47, someone's found 47 endings to one of his books. he worked on. He actually did 47 different endings to whatever the book was. Wow. And they're all online now, so you can go and scroll through and see what.
I've heard this, that he has several endings to For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Well, there. No, you want in the final sentence, you somehow want it, in the last paragraph, you want to, at least I try and do it in history books, which are different, perhaps. You want to return to the main themes mm-hmm. of the book, especially the opening mm-hmm. paragraph, mm-hmm. so you have a circular sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even in an article, you can do this, a short article, and we probably should return to the subject, which is that we will be writing articles from this, out of this information.
Yeah.
And so we'll be able to put some of these insights.
Is Wes Pugh still on faculty here?
He is. But he's out at UBC Okanagan as, I think, vice provost.
Because he wrote a book about the law
yes.
school.
Yeah.
I don't know how he came upon a lot of stuff because he didn't interview me, and not that was an irrevocable mistake, but it would have been useful because I had a few things I could have said that he didn't pick up on. But anyway, I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we both have his book.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this will be interesting when you finally get around to it.
Well, we'll see what happens and get try and get some profiles out, short articles. I don't know if it will lead to a law, you know, a book about the law school, but
no.
I don't see why not. Down the road, perhaps.
Yeah. You know, there was a big coffee table type book came out last year about the history of libraries and public libraries in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw it. Did you see it?
Yeah.
It's enormous. Interesting, quite well put together, I thought. But it was done by someone like you who was, I don't think he was a librarian himself. I think he was a writer, maybe a historian, I don't know.
Yeah, who was it? It was,
I can't remember his name.
We should actually review that for BC Studies.
You should. Yeah, that would make sense.
I might make a note.
Do you even remember the name of it? When I get home, I'll find out and send it to you.
Great.
Yeah. Is there anything else?
We're probably set. How is the time? We're...
Yeah. 5 to 3.
Oh, that's that sounds about right. Almost 2 hours. That's what we expected.
Yeah. So Doug Harris is away just temporarily. Is he in?
He's away for 2 weeks. He's in Singapore.
Yeah. They're family friends, the Harrises.
Huh?
They lived up the street from us in Carisdale, and we know all the kids. And Doug, he was a little boy when we first knew him. But he's
Cole was my
Cole, yes.
Yeah, my PhD supervisor.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I was in history, but he was.
That's his father, Cole. Yeah. He's a terrific. History of Canada, and that atlas
yeah.
that he did is amazing.
Well, he's my connection with John Norris.
Yes.
Because they all lived
That's
up
right.
in New Denver.
That's right. And we went to one of the, their daughter, the Harris.
Rachel.
Rachel, were you at the wedding by any chance?
No, I wasn't.
Because we were there
yeah.
in New Denver,
oh,
and
lucky.
I sat next to John Norris at the reception banquet thing. So that's my last time I saw him, and that's about 5 years ago now, I guess.
Well, he's died.
Yes,
John. You know
yeah.
that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cole's up in New Denver, I think, for the summer.
I know. Have you visited him there?
Yes,
it's nice.
In fact, I broke my Trading Bay on the Mountains. The gray book there was my PhD
oh.
dissertation, which I wrote the first draft of the old ranch
in Denver. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, Cole knew I was having a hard time writing it,
yeah.
and he knew I needed to start, and so he had this trick that he would use with PhD students who were not getting on with things. He would offer the use of his ranch house.
What time of the year was this?
I was there from the 1st of September until the end of December, yes. and I did the first draft.
Yeah.
I had nothing else to do, and he wouldn't take money for the rent
utilities. He's a terrific guy. Did you have a hard wooden coal stove and all
yep.
that kind of stuff?
I had the I had the airtight going, and I had and there was of course a big open fireplace too.
Well, at the wedding they had a barn dance. In the barn, you know, yep. they had an old barn there. It looked a little rickety, but we didn't go through the floor or anything, but it's fun.
Right.
Yeah. And Muriel, his wife, is retired now from UBC. She's a biologist. Yeah, biology.
Genetics.
Genetics, that's right. She had this collection of mice that she had to deal with. Regularly.
That's right. She'd have to come up to UBC on the weekends to mm-hmm.
That's right.
feed her mice. Oh, well, that's a nice connection.
Yes. Oh, well, that's interesting. I'll tell my wife because she and Muriel are very good friends.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So anyway, I'll send you information about that library book, and you tell me if there's anything more you want later. Mm-hmm. I'm quite happy to do it by email, or if you want me to come in, I can do that too.
Well, the one thing that I can think of off the top of my head is if we do a profile, then it would be nice to have a photo of you mm-hmm. around the at some time during your work here. So
mm-hmm.
I suppose even earlier, the earlier.
I'm better looking earlier.
Well.
Sure, I'm happy.
That's not what I meant.
No, I have, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
You can pick something out. and are you here occasionally?
We have four kids and two families live in Vancouver, so we're in and out all the time.
So if you could, actually, you could, if you're ever at UBC, you could leave things at the desk downstairs.
Oh, I'd be happy to. That's a good idea.
They'll come. We check in there.
I'll go through. I didn't take away very much at the end of my tenure. I tried to give Sandra Wilkins a pretty good overview. It was like those yellow pages I gave you, but I did it in a loosely form. I added things that I thought about in the last year of my tenure here. And left most of the stuff in the filing cabinet for her to decide what, you know, was worth her keeping. So I did take a few things with me, but there's not much that I've got now.
Well, we should talk to her as well about what she's got, and we can we'll photocopy these, and then we could even leave them.
You can
down
don't
there
worry.
Or
the lyrics are for you to keep.
Oh, good.
I've got those already.
Okay, I'll make a note.
Yeah.
So we'll do not return.
I could, in fact, record them if you want on a tape.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
What about the photo? The photo, is that for us as well, or should we make a scan it?
No, I think I'd like to keep that because they gave me a memorial book when I retired. And I took that out of the scrapbook
yep.
today.
Okay.
So if you'll just pop it in the mail again,
sure.
It's got a stamp on it.
Okay. Well. Oh. I see. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
By mail.
So I can be reached at that address anytime.
Ah, excellent. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we can use the downstairs desk as a kind of
mm-hmm.
drop off and
sure.
pick up if if that works for you.
No, it's fine. Are you working in it out of this building all the time?
Well, I have another office over in the ANSOC building where BC Studies is. So I'll be here a couple of days a week.
So you just ask if there's anything for you at the desk?
Yes, and they'll keep it.
Or I could, if I'm going to drop something off, I could send you a note saying I'll drop this off.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you'll know.
Yep.
Okay.
Good.
Sounds good.
Wow.